Hello, friends. We're going to continue with the second part of Contemporary Halacha Chazar Shir for Fall Semester 2019. Let's begin with the Shir by Rabbi Ezra Schwartz regarding Avodah Zarah and Christianity. There are two fundamental issues when we deal with Christianity as to determine whether or not they have the halachic definition of Avodah Zarah with all the chumras and the various mitzvahs and halachas that apply to Avodah Zarah. Number one is the fact that the Christian belief is in a trinity. And the trinity, by definition, is that there are three parts. There's a Father, a Son, and a Holy Spirit, etc. So that means that there are three parts to a God. So in that sense, if there are three, you know, if you look at it as three gods, that's definitely going to be Avodah Zarah. If you look at it as what we call Shituf, well, that's something that we'll have to talk about a little bit later in this year. The second aspect that could qualify as, could render Christianity into Avodah Zarah is the fact that they believe in incarnation. Carnate means, carna is flesh. Incarnate means in the flesh of. That means God became incarnate, meaning they understand that God somehow connected or became turned into or is manifest in the flesh of a human being, which is their, whatever you want to call him. And that, by definition, means that their idea of God has a physical body, and that means they're worshiping something that as a God that is not God. So even if you would, for example, as we'll see later, perhaps suggest a trinity in and of itself is only Shituf and not Avodah Zarah, if for those who suggest like that, still the fact that there is a belief in incarnation would still render Christianity to possibly be Avodah Zarah. So let's go through three Shitos as to the definition of Christianity as per is a considered Avodah Zarah. So number one, the Rambam in numerous places says explicitly that Christianity is considered Avodah Zarah. In the Perish HaMishnayos, the Rambam writes, when he talks about the holidays, he says the holidays of the Notzrim, and he says are the nation that believes that the Moshiach has come, and that their Sabbath is Sunday, so it's very clear, it would be pretty clear that he's talking about Christians. He says explicitly that all of their sects of these Notzrim are of the Avodah Zarah. And the Rambam echoes that in other areas, in the Yad, and in Stam Yenam, and Hilchos Avodah Zarah, he says that Christians are considered Avodah Zarah. And again, for two reasons. First of all, incarnation is considered Avodah Zarah, as we just mentioned. But secondly, the Rambam does assume that Shituf is considered Avodah Zarah. Shituf meaning joining other gods to the real God. For example, in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, when the Rambam describes the history as to the development of Avodah Zarah, how it could come from Adam HaRishon, who knew Hashem, to a world of belief in Avodah Zarah. So the Rambam begins by saying that at first people started giving kavod to the Meshamshim of Hashem, like the stars and the moons, etc. And that was their way of connecting to Hashem. And that is Avodas Kochavim, says Rama. So it seems that Shita would definitely be Avodah Zarah. That's the first opinion, Shita Sarama. The opposite extreme of the Rama is the opinion of the Meiri. The Meiri was prompted by what seems to be a stira between the various Mishnayos in the beginning of Avodah Zarah that limit our interactions with the Avodah Zarah, in terms of not doing business with them. At certain points, and we know that we do business with them, and we do heal their sick, and we do all kinds of other things that seem to go against the first mission of Avodah Zarah. So Tosfos on Daf Beis Amud Aleph in Avodah Zarah suggests a number of answers how our everyday practice with Ovdei Avodah Zarah seem to go against the Mishnayos, and he says that maybe there's a heter of Eva. In other words, really it should be Aser, but they were matir because of Eva. Number two, Tosfos suggests that maybe the Goyim in our time, meaning in the time of Tosfos, the Bali Tosfos in the 1100s, are not devout, they're not really religious, and that's why we could deal and interact with them. They're not the real of the Avodah Zarah with the capital AZ. And finally, Rabbi Natam says that the Isser of Masa v'Matan only applies to items used in actual Avodah Zarah service, you know, like a Ketores or like other, like idols, but not to other, you know, not by buying vacuum cleaners and t-shirts. But as another answer to that question that Tosfos dealt with, the Meiri suggested an answer, and he said that the modern Christians are umos hagduros bedarkei hanemusos. They are cultured, and they are bound by a coherent set of laws, and the isra of Avodah Zarah that the Mishnayos speak of is talking about people who are more barbaric. And therefore, the Meiri, as he writes it, says clearly that they, you know, the Christians, the modern Christians, would not be considered of the Avodah Zarah. Did he mean it as apologetics? Did he mean it Meikar Hadin? We'll never really know the answer. What does the Meiri do with the Gemara that says that not Nitzri, that not talks about Yom Nitzri is Aser as far as certain things? So the Meiri suggests that Nitzri doesn't come from the word of Netzer as in Nazareth, as in Christianity, the way we typically assume, but rather Netzer is from the word Nevuchadnezzar, Netzar. And Nevuchadnezzar had a sun god, and that sun god was served on Sunday. And that's the Gemara, that's what the Gemara referred to when it talked about this Nitzri, talking about Nitzri and Sunday, that nothing to do with Christianity, but rather this Nevuchadnezzar Avodah Zarah. So that's the Meiri's leniency. There is a middle opinion, and that is the opinion of Tosas in numerous places, where the Gemara discusses the fact that you're not allowed to have a Shuftvus and a Nachri, and we learn that to be from a Pasuk, because you might violate the Issa Deraisa of Lo Yishama Al Picha. Excuse me, which means that not only are you not allowed to swear in the name of Avodah Zarah, of course, but you can't even cause to be sworn in the name of Avodah Zarah. So if you have a partnership with a guy, you will get into a dispute, you'll cause him to swear in the name of a god, of his god, and that will be a violation for you, the Jew, of Lo Yishama Apich, not causing the name of another god to be heard. So here, Rabbeinu Tam says that nowadays, says Rabbeinu Tam, we can accept the swear of our Gentile partners so that we don't have to lose money, because nowadays the Christians swear by Kedoshim Shelahem and by their God. So, and there's no Isser to cause others, to cause Goyim to do Shituf, and because the Goyim are not Mitzuva on this. So there's a gigantic machlokus what the Rabbeinu Tam means. One is that the prohibition of Avodah Zarah, although it applies to Goyim, but Shituf version of Avodah Zarah, meaning Shituf is not considered Avodah Zarah. That is okay for a guy. That is, if a guy believes in God, the real God who created the world, plus another entity, that would not be a problem for a guy. Of course, a Jew can't, but a guy can believe in that, and therefore, if a guy is allowed to believe in Shituf, of course, he could swear for Shituf purposes. That's one suggestion. Another Yehuda, however, says, no. Tosas is not saying at any point that you're allowed to believe in Shituf. It's just that the Isser of causing an oath is not an Isser to, it's a specific halacha in Hilchas Shavuos, making swearing that that's not Asur to Shituf, but believing is, of course, Avodah Zarah. So we have here, as a gigantic machlokas, of how to understand Rabbeinu Tam, whether he holds that Shituf is Mutter for a guy, or it's Aser for a guy, it's just you're allowed to cause swearing. So how do we pass through this? So believe it or not, the Ramah and the Shach, who is make like the Ramah, are makel to say that a guy is not prohibited to have Shituf, which would mean that Shituf would not constitute Avodah Zarah. The Salvechik is very, very perturbed, and he says, no, this is an absolute mistake, the Shach is totally mistaken, and of course Shituf is Avodah Zarah, even for Goyim it would be Avodah Zarah. So that's ultimately a machlokas, what the definition of Shituf is it Avodah Zarah or not? And most Yishanim do assume that Christianity would be considered Avodah Zarah. So that's as far as the definition of Christianity. Let's now deal with a number of questions. So number one, can you enter a church? So we have explicit Mishnayos, and Avodah Zarah says you're not even allowed to enter a city that has Avodah Zarah, and clearly you wouldn't be able to enter a church, so it's clear. No, you can't enter a church. If it's a makom of Avodah Zarah, certainly according to the Rambam, it's a makom of Avodah Zarah, you cannot enter a church. If you would hold like the Meiri, which we don't really accept the halacha, that it's not Avodah Zarah, so it's not Avodah Zarah. There is a very fascinating machlokas between the Rashba and the Rush, whether or not Avizrayo de Avodah Zarah is Yaharik Val Yavar. In other words, are you allowed to, if somebody's running after you with a dagger to kill you, are you allowed to enter a church to save your life? And that would be a machlokas, presumably Rashba and the Rush. So this would mean that if you wanted to go to see Michelangelo's art in the Sistine Chapel. So if somebody's running after you with a knife and that's where you could escape, then there would be Machlokas Yishonim if you're allowed to go in. In other words, you probably wouldn't be so easily allowed into church to enjoy, to enter a church. There's another issue, besides the fact that the Mishnah says you're not allowed to go into a city that has Avodah Zarah, there's another Gemara Avodah Zarah, Hachik Mi Beis Avodah Zarah. And Rav Moshe Feinstein adds in his Tshuvas that even looking at their artwork is awesome, because the whole point of the artwork is to inspire the religion. And furthermore, there's an Isser Darais of Altifnu El Ha'elilim, which means that you're not supposed to look at, you know, Christian artwork or things that inspire other religions. Now, that's all about churches. What about a mosque? After all, a mosque, the Islam religion, does believe in the same God that we believe, the God who is Borei, you know, Shemayim V'aretz, in 7 days, and there are no other partners. So, presumably, maybe they believe the same God that we believe in. And that's what the Rambam seems to say, that Islam is not a Avodah Zarah, and therefore one would be permitted to enter a mosque. That would be the Rambam's Shita, and that's how Rabbi Avadia passes. However, the Tzitz Eliezer quotes Iran, and the Ran says that you're right, that they only have one God, but they bow down to Muhammad, and it's a formal religion other than our religion, and that itself is enough to make it Avodah Zarah. Rabbi Avadia says, yes, you have a Ran, but L'maisa, so Machok is Ran and Rambam, and who knew Islam better? The Ran who lived somewhere in Europe, or the Rambam who lived among Muslims? And therefore, the Rav Avadia says we're going to go like the Rambam because he understands Islam better. And the Rav Avadia permits a person to enter a mosque, even though it would be prohibited to enter a church. Now, another question. What happens if somebody calls you, Rabbi, I have a meeting, an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, a basket weaving course. It's in a social hall or the basement of a church. I have to go for voting. Is it mutter or not? So Rav Moshe says that if it's clear that if it's not a sanctuary, rather, it's some other annex, some other room, and it's not during services, and you go through a different entrance, then you're allowed to go into that side room, that side of the building. What happens if it's a church that's no longer a church, like the cloisters up in Washington Heights? So Rav Shatta says it's azur, because again, admiring the architecture is itself a violation of Al Tifnu El Ha'elilim. What about saying the name of, you know, J-E-S-U-S? So here we have 2 points. First of all, the Chavis Yair says you could say the name Jesus because that was his personal name before he became any kind of deity, and therefore you could say the name Jesus. However, the second half of the name, what we'll call X or C-H-R-I with an S-T at the end, that's more problematic to say because it might mean Mashiach, and by saying that word, by saying that name, that last name of his, that might be as though you're being Mekabel him as, God forbid, him as being the Messiah. So it's always nice to say, you know, Yashka, which is the name that we, you know, Jews have referred to it over many years. Let's begin the review of Rabbi Simon's Shir on Hilchos Mezuzah. First of all, we know that a room, in order to be Chayv Mezuzah, a bayis has to be 4 amos by 4 amos. And the question is, does it have to be at least 4 on each side, or as long as you have 16 square amos? So that's machlok, as the Rambam says, that it's chayv as long as it's 16 square amos, even if you have 8 by 2, that's chayv. And the Rash is, Machmer says, no, or Mekel actually, you only need, it's only going to be chayv if a room is 4 amos minimum on each side. And therefore the Shach Paskins, that lahachmir, meaning to be machmir on the shayla of a safek of a bracha, and you should put a mezuzah if it's 8 by 2, but without a bracha until you have 4 by 4. The Taz, however, holds that everyone agrees that you need 4 by 4 minimally, and that is what the customarily what is held, that if it's not 4 by 4, even if it is 8 by 2, if it's not 4 by 4, it does not require a mezuzah. However, there's a new discussion. What happens if you have a room that is less than 4 by 4, but is usable as it is? So here you have the opinion of the Chamudi Daniel, cited in the Pesachei Teshuva, that 4 by 4 is only necessary for a base dira that's not usable by 4 by 4. But if you have a room that it's like a base shar, a mirpeset, a ma'avar, a whole passageway, then it is usable even less than 4 by 4, and such a room would be chayev in a mezuzah. So it's a big chiddush, and pashtus is that less than 4x4 is not, but therefore people do put a mezuzah if it's like this chavud Daniel on smaller rooms, if it's a passageway or if it's a or if it's a closet, a walk-in closet, or if it's something that would, as long as it's not a regular base dira. I'm sorry, for closets we're not so machmir to do it. Mezuzah would just be a chumrah. Now, when we have closets, you have on one hand the Chumrah Daniel said that it's possible that a small room could be chayev to have a mezuzah if that's the use, if that's tashmisha of the room. Rabbi Kveger points out that if you're going from a closet to a room or a small porch to a room, so even if the closet is small or the porch would be small, but nevertheless coming from the closet into the room or from the small porch into the room, from the outside into the room, and the room is 4x4, so you should need a mezuzah coming from the outside on the right side, from coming out into the room. Which is sort of funny. Rabbi Simon doesn't really like that, Rabbi Kveger, even though many poskim do follow that, Rabbi Kveger. Rabbi Simon doesn't really like it because he assumes that there has to be a coming in and a going out. And since in Hilchos Mezuzah we follow coming in, so the coming, if you go from the porch or from the closet into the room, that's not walking into the room, that's walking back out of the closet or back out of the porch. So that's why Rabbi Simon doesn't really like this, Rabbi Kveger, but many poskim do follow that opinion of Rabbi Kveger. I've heard that opinion from many of our Rosh Yeshivas, as well as Rav Moshe, etc. Keep in mind that even if we're not sure which side of the door to put the mezuzah on, you never would place it on both sides of the door. That's just one place. You have to figure out which way is the right way and put it on the correct side. To put two mezuzahs on one doorpost would be an issur d'oraisa b'al tosef, possibly. Let us talk about apartment buildings. So shutfus of an akum makes a person potter, and therefore if there's a shutfus, that's not going to be chayev. Now, if there's a in general, we have to know that any door that doesn't have a delis, the Rambam says that a delis is one of the necessary prerequisites to be considered a door that's chayev mezuzah, or doorway that's chayev mezuzah. So if there's no delis, there's no mezuzah. However, we are machmir to yes, like other shon, to yes, but we just mentioned that even though the Rambam says that a necessary requirement is a delis in order to have a mezuzah, we're machmir to put a mezuzah even when there's no delis, but to be choshish for the Rambam's shita, we'll do so without a bracha. Let's move to the next point. How high on the doorpost should you place the mezuzah? So the Shulchan Aruch says it has to be on the Shlisha Elyon. That means on the upper third, but on the minhag is to do it on the bottom of the upper third. Now, let's take a step back. If a person places the mezuzah on the wrong side, or then they're not yotzer. If they place it too low, that's below the upper third, they're not yotzer. If they place it too high, that's within the top tefach of the doorpost, they're not yotzer. So the proper place is within the Shlisha Elyon, but specifically the bottom of the Shlisha Elyon. What happens if the door is very tall? So we have a Yerushalmi that says that even if it's a very tall door, like a shar of a city or something like that, you should still place it at shoulder height. So is that against what the Bavli says, that it's supposed to be a Shlisha Elyon? So the Chazanish suggests that it's not a Machlokas Bavli Yerushalmi, rather what the Bavli means when it says the Shlisha Elyon, that is typically the place where it hits the shoulder height. Now, with that in mind, we could suggest the following. What would be the halacha if you have the what Rabbi Simon calls the Washington Heights kitchens? Meaning, it's a kitchen where, an entrance to a kitchen where, as you walk in through the doorway, what protrudes from the right side of the doorway and the left side of the doorway are cabinets on the bottom part of the doorway. So the cabinets, let's say, are 10 tefachim high. We could say that the cabinets themselves serve as the doorway. On the other hand, we could say, no, the cabinets are just in the doorway, but the frame of the door, which is a foot and a half set back on the right and on the left, is the doorway. So should we put on the Shlisha Elyon of that cabinet, which would be around the height of your thigh, or do we say it should be at the Shlisha Elyon of the door, which is about shoulder height? So based on what we just said, that the point of Shlisha Elyon is not really Din of Shlisha Elyon per se, but rather it's shoulder height. So we would come out that this question, you should not put on the Shlisha Elyon of the cabinets, which would be around your thighs, but rather it should be on the Shlisha Elyon of the entire door, which again would be just about shoulder height. Let's talk about leaving the mezuzahs. The halacha is that if a person is moving out, they're supposed to leave the mezuzahs for the Jew who is to follow them. If you don't know if a guy is moving in after you, or if you're not sure if it might be a guy, then you do not leave your mezuzah because you don't want your mezuzah to get into the hands of a Eino Yehudi. Now, the halacha happens to be, the Rama points out, that if you do leave the mezuzah for the coming tenant, or the coming dweller, you are permitted to charge the next dweller for that. So that is at least one helpful hint. Now, it often is the case when a person is moving out of an apartment that the landlord paints the apartment before the apartment is given to the next tenants. If that's the case, you could take it off before painting so it doesn't get ruined by the painting. And once it's off, you could put it in your pocket and walk away. You don't have to put it back up for the next tenant. Let's talk about different rooms that may or may not require a mezuzah. So first of all, a storage room, a beis hadir, a beis haotzar, the Shulchan Aruch says is chayev in a mezuzah. But the limitation is it's only a storage room that's part of your dira. So for example, those self-storage units on the side of the highway, that would not require a mezuzah. If you have a garage that's attached to your house, it definitely does require a mezuzah, because that's a beis haotzar that's attached to your house. It's associated with your dira. If you have a disattached garage, so here, this would be a shaila, and therefore we would put up a mezuzah, but without a bracha. Now, let's talk about some other places. A shul, the Shulchan Aruch says is pater, unless of course somebody lives there. As opposed to Beis Medrash, there are two dais in the Shulchan Aruch, that on one hand, maybe it's more like a dira, because you're allowed to eat there, allowed to sleep there a little bit, as opposed to a shul. So therefore, it will be machmir to put a mezuzah on the Beis Medrash, but without a bracha. A chanus. Let's talk about office buildings. The Shulchan Aruch tells that a chanus is patur. The question is it just a booth in the market, or is it even our office buildings? So maybe then you could probably assume that our office buildings are patur because it's only dias arayis because you don't live there at night. But the minhag is, yes, we do put a mezuzah, but without a bracha, because Mekadin presumably doesn't need it. But if you find yourself in a situation that it's going to be difficult to put up a mezuzah at work, there is probably on what to rely, that it's part of mitam chanus. Now, what happens if you rent a property? So rental properties in Chutz La'aretz are only chayev. Rental property in general is only chayev mitarabar. And we give you 30 days in Chutz La'aretz to put up your mezuzah. Now, the Nesibis suggests that this heter of 30 days is only if you don't know how long you're going to be there, or you plan on being there for less than 30 days. Then you don't have to put up a mezuzah. But mitchila, when you move in, you know you're going to stay there for more than 30 days, then you should indeed put the mezuzah up immediately. Roshach, and also Rosh Hashanah likes this, that it says that if you're signing a lease, typically we say schiris lo kanya. But here, since you signed the lease, this schiris is kanya, and therefore we won't apply the kula of 30 days. But Moshe says that you could put it up immediately, but without a bracha, and then on the 30th day, 31st day, you touch the mezuzah, and that would be considered like the hanachas ha-mezuzah. What do you mean? How can you make a bracha when you're not doing a ma'isa? This is an issue that is raised in regards to when a woman, by mistake, accepts Shabbos without realizing that she forgot to light the Shabbos candles. The Magen Avraham says that she could have a goy light the Shabbos candles during Ben Shemashas, and then she'll make the bracha on it. And all the poskim say, hey, how could you have a bracha of Birch Samitza, Shirk Adishanu, if you didn't even do it in a ma'isa? Nevertheless, my Rosh says it's okay. So that's what Moshe says. You could just make the bracha, even though you put it up a month ago. Chaim Kanievsky says, no, put it up right away with the bracha, and as long as there's a lease, you can put it right away with the bracha. So that's what Rav Simon says. You put it on right away with the bracha. Let's go to the next point. The next point is a question of how could you have a mezuzah on a bedroom of a couple? After all, also the shayash mitaso b'fnei kisvei hakodesh. So we'll mention five ways to deal with this issue. Number one, the most kal opinion is that of the Rosh Hashanah. The Rosh Hashanah says that the same Torah who says pru revu and a husband and wife should be together in their bedroom is the Torah that says to put a mezuzah on the rooms, including the bedroom. So it must be that Hashem wants us to put a mezuzah there, even though a husband will be there with his wife. The Baal Tanya, Shulchan Aruch Rav, says an interesting svara. He says you don't have to worry about the issur of asur l'shayash mitaseh b'fnei kisvei hakodesh, because if a mezuzah is attached to the wall, that makes it have a reshus b'fnei atzmo. The Chai Adam says a different heter, that if there are two wrappings around kisvei hakodesh or around the mezuzah, as long as one of them is not miyuchad for the kisvei hakodesh, then you can have a double covering. So, for example, if you have a mezuzah and you put it in a mezuzah case, and then you wrap it one time to be shalom, not miyuchad. You have in mind that it's just to be a wrapper, but not really miyuchad for the mezuzah. That would be a way to have a double covering that would make it mutter for a husband to be with a wife. The stipler says, no, simply put a nail above the mezuzah, you hang a shirt or a towel over the mezuzah before tashmish. Finally, the Ramah cites Yesh Omrim that if there's a room where tashmish is occurring, such a room doesn't require a mezuzah, because the room that's not a kavadika room because of that, and therefore the room doesn't require a mezuzah at all. That's one opinion in the Ramah. That's that point. As far as location of the mezuzah, it's important to know that you should put it in the depth of the entrance closest to the outside, so there's more area that's being covered by the mezuzah, Okay, let's start recording for the next year, which is Hilchas Sukkah by Rabbi Konigsberg. The first thing that we have to realize is that the sukkah is supposed to be arai, and that means even if it's strong, the way it was built in terms of the walls, there has to be some arayness to the sukkah. So one aspect that applies to the walls is that the walls can't be more than 20 amos high, because then you have to make it in a kevadika strength to the walls, to reinforce the walls. But even so, even though the walls could be strong, as long as they are made at a height that could theoretically be arai, the schach on the other hand must be arai mamish. That's what Tosa says when he's asked, why can't you just nail down the walls if your sukkah is under 20? Why can't you nail down the schach? Well, and therefore, why should rain be a siman klala? After all, you can make it that it's nailed. The schach is nailed in. And Tosa says that the schach has to be arai mamish, even though the walls only have to be roi lios arai. Ideally, the schach should be such that rain could theoretically come through. But at the same time, the schach shouldn't be. The schach should be heavy enough that it's covering, but not heavy enough that you could ideally see the stars. Let's talk about the size of the sukkah. For the three opinions, there's Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, and Rebbe. Beis Shammai says Rosh of Ruvah Shulchan, which is 7x7 tvachim. This is one of the few cases that we pass like Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel says no, just Rosh of Ruvah, which is 6x6 tvachim. We don't pass like Beis Hillel here. And Rebbe says a bias is Dalet Amos by Dalet Amos. We definitely don't pass in like Rebbe. The point of Rebbe is that you need a Diras Keva. So a Diras Keva is Dalet Amos, just like Dalet Amos is the din of bias by all other areas that you need a bias, like Maka, Emezuzah, and Nege Batim. But we don't hold like that. We hold like Beis Shammai that has to be 7 Tvachim by 7 Tvachim. The height, of course, has to be Teren Tvachim. And what about how long do the walls have to be? So the Gemara tells us that the Halacha Moshe Sinai that is sufficient to have Shnayim Kehilchasan or Shlishas Afilu Tevach. Now, this does not mean that you could just have any two walls Kehilchasan. It means that the two walls that are kehilchasan have to be, if it's an L shape, if they're perpendicular. Additionally, the tefach that we need for that third wall, the tefach has to be within lavad of the wall, because if you have, let's say, within lavad 2.9 tefachim, and the tefach, so you have 3.9 tefachim altogether, so that's the rov of the wall. And also there's a discussion if you need a tzuras ha-pesach above the small wall, between the tefach and the corner of the standing L, so that would be making a like the third wall, filling in that third wall. So it's not so simple. You could just use Shnayim Kehil. You could just use Shnayim Kehilchasan. They have to have all these additional requirements as well. Now, let's talk about being Samech al Dover HaMekabel Tumah, which is one of the issues that applies to canvas sukkahs. But even if you don't have even a fiberglass sukkah that has a metal frame, if you're putting the schach down on the metal, so you're putting schach resting on a Dover HaMekabel Tumah. So the Mishnah in Sukkah tells us that if you're Samech Sukkah of a Kari Hamita, we have Machlokes Tanam. Now, Makari Hamita are Mekabel Tumah, and it's Machlokes Tanam. Tanakama says it's totally fine. Rabbi Yehuda says it's possible. Okay, now if you have passed like Rabbi Yehuda, that you cannot put your schach on top of Kari Hamitu because of Mekabel Tumah, why does Rabbi Yehuda pass? So one opinion says, either because it's Ein LaKeva, one opinion the Gemara says that, it's not Keva if you could, these are boards that you might take for your bed. The other opinion says, because Mamid B'davar HaMekabel Tumah is a problem. Now what is the problem? So even within the passing like Rabbi Yehuda, and passing like the reason Rabbi Yehuda passes is because of Maimon B'davar HaMekabel Tumah, but why is there a problem with Maimon B'davar HaMekabel Tumah? That itself is subject to a further Machlokas. Machlokas Rishonim, the Ran says that we're worried that if you are Maimon B'davar HaMekabel Tumah, you might actually be Mesachich with the B'davar HaMekabel Tumah, which would be a Psul D'Oraisa. This is a Gzeira Otu being Mesachich, which would be D'Oraisa. Rashi says no. Rashi says that being mamid b'davar mekabel tumah is itself a psul min haTorah, because we look at the schach equally as though it's whatever is holding it up. So if a mamid is holding it up is pasul, so schach that it's holding would also be considered pasul midoraisa. So how do we pask in all these questions? So the summary shonim and the in fact the Shulchan Aruch hold that this whole issue doesn't begin. Everything is kasher mitchila. There's no iser at all of a davar. There's no iser at all called Maimon davar mekabel tumah. Everything he passes like the chachamim against Rabbi Yehuda, who hold that you're allowed to be sonach with kari hamita, and there is no even question to begin with. The problem is that most rishonim do not hold like that, and they're like Rabbi Yehuda that kari hamita are indeed pasul. But which reason is it? Because the reason that it's keva, or because the reason that it's a maimid? So the Ramban and the Ran say no, it is a problem because of maimid. So this is the source for the chumrah of canvas, that the metal beams will be supporting the schach. Now, the Shulchan Aruch himself, again, like I mentioned, holds like the Tanakama, who holds that Kari Hamita is kashrus, there would be no source whatsoever from Maimid. But we have another Shulchan Aruch elsewhere, where the Shulchan Aruch is mesupik if you could rest the schach on a ladder, which is obviously the Kabel Tumah, because it's a kli. So we have a question now, which seems to be a steer in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch said that we pass in that you're allowed to put schach on top of Kari Hamita, but he says that he's mesupik if you could put schach on top of a ladder. What's his suffix? So the Magen Avraham suggests that the Shulchan Aruch indeed is mesupik whether or not you're allowed to be ma'amir at Davar HaMekabel Tumah. So lichat chila, you should be machmir for the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, the Tan of Rabbi Yehuda, not be ma'amir at Davar HaMekabel Tumah. But the other lad, the other Shulchan Aruch says that b'di'evid, it's kasher, so kasher b'di'evid. But the Magen Avraham adds that even if it's asal chatchila, if you would be mafsik between the Davar HaMekabel Tumah and the schach, between the ladder or the metal and the schach, that would make the metal only a maimid dimaimid, which is kasher. Now it happens to be the Chazon Ish argues on this last point of the Magen Avraham and says that I hold, says the Chazon Ish, that a hefsik, if you put a little piece of wood in the middle between the schach and the davar mekabel tumah, that wouldn't solve the problem. It would still be a problem called maimid dimaimid. Maimid dimaimid is not a kulis, says the Chazon Ish, but it happens to be, as Rabbi Shechter points out, that the Chazon Ish himself holds that there is no psul of maimid in the first place. He holds that mikra hadin, there's no problem of maimid dimaimid. He holds there's no psul of maimid himself, but if you hold that maimid is a problem, then the Chazon Ish is just pointing out that maimid and maimid will not solve the problem. Let's go to the next point. The next point is, halach lamaisa, if you find yourself in a canvas sukkah where the schach is resting immediately on top of the metal, even if there's no hefsek, you can make a bracha there, you can eat there, although lechatchil will be proper to make a hefsek there. Now, let's go to the next problem. What about mats used as schach? There are two potential problems for mats. Number one, it's mats are mekabel tumah in certain circumstances. And number two, there's a gzera derabanan called gzeras tikra that applies to planks that are 4 tefachim wide. So let's see how that applies to mats. So number one, the Mishnah tells us that mats, if they're the shchiva, they're mekabel tumah and they're pasul. If they're the sikuch, then they're not mekabel tumah and they're kosher. So most of our, you know, specially made mats for schach are clearly made l'sikuch, so they won't be mekabel tumah. But there's the other issue, and that is the issue of gzeras tikra. There's machlokes tanam if you're allowed to use planks between 3 and 4 tefachim, but more than 4 tefachim, everyone agrees that a plank of wood that's more than 4 tefachim is possible because it looks like a roof of a house. It looks like you're sitting in a house, so that you're allowed to sit in a house. But what do we have with a mat? A mat is not a plank. It's tiny little reeds that are attached. So is that, although each individual reed is small, but they're connected, they are taka wider than a 4 tefachim. So some say that if you attach them together, it would be a problem. That's what the Rashba says. That even if you attach narrow things together to make 4 tefachim, it will be possible. That's what some hold. But most poskim assume that our mats will not have the psil, the gzeres rabban of gzeres tikra, for a number of reasons. Number one, the whole gzeres tikra is that it looks like a roof. And this is how you roof your rooms in this neighborhood. But in our neighborhood, we don't. We don't make bamboo roofs in our neighborhood. And furthermore, rain could go easily through them. Unlike a tikra, these mats don't protect you from the elements. And thirdly, even if we'd be machmir for the Rashba, that mats that are that things small planks connected to be more than 4 tefachim should have a gzera, but here they're so flimsy and so thin, so we wouldn't be gozer to a tikra. So therefore, mats according to most poskim would be acceptable. As far as the strings, if you have the strings that are holding the mats together, if they're made out of nylon, which is synthetic, it's not my gidulei karka. It's not kosher l'schach. It's holding your mat together. So they suggest that you should make it into hemp. Hemp is a string that is not woven, that is not made into a twine. It's just a natural filament cord that does come from the ground and is not manufactured in a way that's metabolism. Let's go to a next issue. We have the psul of tasev lo min ha'asli. Of course, the Mishnah talks about not having a pile of straw and digging out the inside because you end up with a roof without actually putting on a schach. And similar other times this comes up in Maseches Sukkah. But very practically, it means that if you have a frame, you cannot put the schach before the walls. Because if you don't have mechitzas yet, the schach is not providing it in ohel. And it ends up that when you put up the walls, you will end up with a tas of lo min ha'asli. So this issue is one of three issues that can be of concern with a canvas sukkah. That is, that if you would put up the frame and then the schach before you do the walls, because it is easier because you could walk through, that would be a problem of tasev lo min ha'asli. A second problem that the canvas sukkahs might have. So we had one problem that we mentioned earlier, which is that it's metal bars, which would be a mamed d'davar mekabel tumah. The second issue we just mentioned now, that it's that it could be tassel and asli if you do it in the wrong order. And third problem is that if the walls themselves are made out of curtains, that raises a totally different issue. Because we learned that a mechitza she'eino amedes beruach metzuyah is not considered a mechitza. What is the definition of mechitza ha'amedes or not? So if it shifts 3 tefachim to and fro from the y-axis, from that middle point, if it shifts 3 tefachim in one direction, or 3 tefachim into another direction, that would be a problem of that it's eina omedes. If it's pulled very taut and only blows 2 tefachim in either direction, that will not be as bad. That is one issue. Another issue that is of concern when it comes to the use of canvas for the walls is that Rabbeinu Peretz said that there's a gzer drabana not to use sedinu, even if you tie them down and they don't move at all and they're really tight, because of a gzer dilma mintiki. They might flap away or fly away or disconnect. However, Rav Shechter suggests that if you have a canvas that is specifically made to be tied and has metal grommets that allows it to be tied, maybe you won't have this gzera drabanan of canvas, but it might be proper, if you do use canvas, to put up strings, horizontal strings that are loved one from another, to prevent the issue of fabric walls. And of course, if you do put up those loved strings to prevent the issue of tassel and as, you have to make sure that the loved strings are placed before the schach is put on top of the sukkah. Let's go to the next point in this shir, and that is talking about schach puzzle. So, Schach Pasel is Pasel with four Tfachim. It happens to be that if it's less than four Tfachim, you are actually, yes, allowed to sit underneath it. So if you have, for example, a fluorescent light bulb fixture that's a few feet wide and only four feet long, but it's only a few inches wide, it's less than four Tfachim wide, you could actually sit underneath that Schach Pasel, since it's less than four Tfachim, it's considered Kamisha Eina. That is as opposed to Avir. Avir Pasel is with three Tfachim. If it's less than three Tfachim of Avir, then it's Kisasim Dami, so it's considered that there's Schach there, but you're still not allowed to sit under there. As opposed to Schach Pasel, you can sit under Schach Pasel, you cannot sit under Avir, even if it's less than three Tfachim. Why? Maybe because Mishnah Berurah says, because the airspace is more nicker than the Schach Pasel. But asks the Rush, if you can't sit under Avir, then every stick is Pasel, because there's always a little bit of Avir. So the Rush says that Avir is Pasel only if it's, even if it's less than three Tfachim, only if it's Alpnei Kulo, if it's from wall to wall. That's when it's nicker, and that's when you can't sit under any Avir at all, and therefore it's always very, very smart to put one long piece of bamboo perpendicular to the rest of the schach, so you'll never have an open avir from side to side. That's al pnei kula. Of course, dofen akuma, you could have schach pasul on the side. Let me rephrase that. The psul of four tefachim of schach is only be'emtza. That's where we have the full psul of schach pasul. But min hatzad, the psul is up to four amas because we could use dofen akuma. Dofen akuma, you can't sit underneath it because it's considered the wall, not schach, but it doesn't have. It doesn't pass your sukkah if you have Dofen Akuma. That is the end of the shir regarding Hilchos Sukkah. Let's now go to Rabbi Packer's shiurim, the last two shiurim that we're going to do, and that is electricity on Shabbos and the application of electricity on Shabbos as applying to security systems, hotel doors, automatic toilets, sinks, etc. So the first thing that we have to realize when we deal with the electricity is there are two shilas that have to be addressed. Number one, what is the status of electricity? And number two, are you using the electricity to do a malacha? So, for example, if you have any incandescent light bulb that has a filament, even if we can say that electricity on its own is not considered a malacha, but letting the incandescent filament glow to give off light in a regular incandescent bulb, that's going to be havara. Similarly, if you use a microwave to cook or a tractor, or an electric tractor to harvest or to plow, so all those things are doing malachas besides the electricity component, and that, of course, is going to be usher without any question. We just want to ask, what happens if you have something like a fan, where the spinning of a fan itself is not a malacha? The question is, what about the electricity in and of itself? So, there are a number of shitas that describe how we could see electricity in halacha. The earliest one, perhaps, would be that of the Aruch HaShulchan, which we do not paskin like, and that assumes that there's an issue of havara. The havara is that the Aruch HaShulchan assumes that there's fire in the wires, and that is what they used to think, that they used to think that when they have wires together, the fire would come el ha-poel, and that we definitely know, based on our physics today, that that is not correct, and that is not how we understand electricity. The Chazon Ish, which is the sheet that we'll focus on most, is of the opinion that we're dealing with an actual Issa D'Oraisa. The Issa D'Oraisa is an Issa D'Oraisa of either Tikkun Mana or Binyan, perhaps Binyan B'Karka. What is a Tikkun Mana? The Tikkun Mana is that you're making something work. We'll explain it in a moment. The Binyan, even though we say typically ein binyan bekelim, but if you are bona in a very firm way, if you have a firm attachment, which is what we call tika, when something is attached firmly there, we might say binyan bekelim. Furthermore, says the Chazon Ish, if the wires or outlets are attached to the house, it would constitute binyan b'mechuber, because you're connecting whatever the connections are in the house. But let's explain what the Chazon Ish means. What the Chazon Ish means is not just that you're putting a finishing, when you turn on a fan, you're not just putting a finishing touch or creating a circuit. That in and of itself might not be all the Chazon Ish means. What he means is that you have a chunk of metal and plastic, and by connecting the circuit, that's giving life to the fan and making the fan, which was until now meaningless, plastic and metal, now becoming a useful, productive, functioning fan. Now, the Rav Shlomo Zalman rejects the arguments of the Chazaner, saying that this is not considered bona b'mechubar, because we know that even if it would be attached to the wall, when you flip a switch, that's more like opening and closing a door. If you have a door that's b'mechubar and you open and close the door, that's not considered bona. Why? Because it's daka b'kach. So here too, it's considered daka b'kach. And firmly, how could you call the creation of the circuit which makes the kli work to be considered a teka, a firm connection, when here you could just flip the switch the other way and disattach the circuit? So we suggested that perhaps some of the ideas of the Chazon Ish means, what the Chazon Ish is meaning, is that we're not talking again about a physical connection but that makes it teka, but the teka is created by virtue of the significance of what it's accomplishing, not the physically it's a strong connection. It happens to be the most of why you poskim agree with the Reb Shlomo Zalman against the Chazon Ish and assume that indeed electricity might only be the Rabbanon. But of course, the Chazon Ish is to be reckoned with, that he held that it was the Raisa. Now, perhaps a suggestion of what the Chazon Ish might mean as far as applying the din of Makkeh B'Patish to electricity could be understood the way Rav Asher Weiss explains. Rav Asher Weiss quotes a Yerushalmi who has a very unusual way of looking at toldos and avos melachos. Yerushalmi writes that the Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish worked on the 39 melachos for many years, and for each of the melachos they figured out which were the toldos for each of the melachos. Some toldos they found many toldos. Some toldos they pinned on a specific melacha, whatever melacha it was to be pinned on. And some told us they didn't know where to put it, so they just said that toldo would be pinned on Makkeh B'Patish, which totally undermines the way we look at it's not that you have a malacha, an av malacha, and a toldo emanates from it, but to the contrary. We start assuming that something is asur because it has to be asur because it's a toldo, it's just not the kind of thing that could be done on Shabbos, and then we have to figure out where it's going to fit in. So once you say something is a meaningful, significant act, and once you do it, it's going to be a problem, so when you're going to go ahead and attach it to something, we're going to call it Makkeh B'Patish. Makkeh B'Patish just means that it's doing something choshev on Shabbos. It doesn't have to be that there are certain parameters that constitute Makkeh B'Patish, and anything that fits into that is going to be Aser. It's the opposite. We decide that something has to be Aser, and when we have to ask ourselves why, we'll say, well, it doesn't fit into any other category, so let it be Makkeh B'Patish. Perhaps that's what the Chazon Ish was intending. And this is also significant because when Rav Moshe deals with microphones as opposed to hearing aids, Rav Moshe also says that there's a chash d'oraisa, meaning he doesn't say it's asur d'oraisa, but there's a question that maybe using a microphone could be a chash d'oraisa, because you're doing something significant, you're making a significant, meaningful result of making your voice be heard far away. Now, other shitos that describe what the malacha that is involved in electricity is the possibility of being molded reyach, because just like you're putting a reyach, the amorphous reyach, into something, so to hear you're injecting, infusing electricity into an appliance, that's like being molded. That's one possibility. Rav Shechter has another possibility. He says that electricity is like the halacha of a tziner sha'alu ba'kaskasim. If you have a gutter that is stuffed up with leaves, with dirt, with things that plug it up. So if you unplug that system, that's usr. So similarly, if you have a wire that has resistance and you allow the electricity to flow, the electrons to flow, that would be considered allowing the, that would be like tzino sh'aluba kas kasim. When we discuss the electricity that's used in certain modern technology as far as screens or mouses, that when you have something, a computer or a telephone that's on and you just activate it by pressing a button, that's used through semiconductors. What semiconductors are is that you're not actually creating a circuit, the circuit's already there, but by applying pressure you're adjusting the resistance and allowing the current to flow more or less. So in a certain sense you are bringing something mimavis l'chaim or mechaim l'mavis, but you're not actually creating a new circuit. So that has to be analyzed as far as the Chazon Ish's understanding. Is the pshat that you are doing a tikkun mana, that you're attaching the circuit, or the way we were suggesting, that you're making something meaningful that could taka be an issue by with semiconductors? Whereas if you learn the other issues, semiconductors where you're not creating a circuit might not really be doing as much. As far as changing the shinui zerim, change the volume or brightness, that might also be more kal, because you're not creating the circuit. It's there, you're just allowing more or less to travel through it, and that might be better. So if there's a dat who needs to use electricity, it's better to have his machine or his phone or whatever it is on the whole time and just adjust higher or lower if necessary. Now, there's an interesting svara that one might ask. If a doctor or somebody needs to carry a cell phone or a GPS tracker, when they move, there are things that are changing on the GPS location, and the bars of his phone will change as he goes from place to place. Is that a problem? So Rasha Weiss says it's not, because since certain things are malacha only if you're mechaven to it, and here, it's the word that we're dealing with in electricity is not that you're changing something, but the point is that you're doing something significant with electricity. So since what you're doing by walking from here to shul, from shul home, even though the bars, you have more bars for your cellular reception here as opposed to there, you're not doing anything significant with that electricity, so that would not be considered to be a problem. You could add the svar of the Magen Mishnah. The Magen Mishnah says that when it comes to psik resha, where you're doing something and something else ends up happening, when it comes to tikkun mana, maybe for tikkun mana, psik resha isn't enough. You have to actually be mechavin for the tikkun. In other words, if the whole point is that you're doing the tikkun, if it's a psik resha, you're not intending for that tikkun, maybe that won't constitute tikkun mana at all. That's a beautiful svara that the Magen Mishnah suggests, and that svara would apply to very common questions. If you're walking and the light flips on, goes on because you walked by a motion sensor. So here, if we assume the issue is only an issue of makabe patish, and we assume that you're walking home from shul, your goal is not to turn on light, it's just psik resha light ends up turning on. So since you're not mechaven for that tikkun that occurred, maybe that's not called tikkun manas. So that's a beautiful svara that the Magen Mishnah could be used to be makel. However, we have to point out we don't really paskin like that Magen Mishnah. So we'll have to look for some other svaras. Let's go. We'll come back to that nekuda a little bit in 2 minutes. But let's now go to the final shiur that we'll go through in this chazara, and that's the applications of all the electricity issues that we just learned about to Rabbi Packer's shiur about the security and hotel doors and automatic toilets and the like. Let's first talk about standing in front of a camera that all shuls, that many shuls nowadays know. So standing in front of a camera is an issue of kosev, and that is because the Rambam says that kosev does not just include writing letters, but it includes making pictures as well. So when you stand in front of a camera, you're causing your picture to be projected onto the screen, and that would be kosev. So the question is, do we consider this to be a kosev on a deraisa level or not? So here you have Rav Moshe, who talks about taking a paroches that's split in half, and opening the paroches, closing the paroches, and he says there that in order to be considered kosev, the letters have to be fastened onto the medium, meaning every time that you have letter writing, you have a medium, and then you have the ksiva that's onto the medium, onto the tablet. So it could be that in the case of a screen, you don't really have the fastening of, yes, the letters appear on the medium, on the tablet, on the screen, but there's no adhesion or there's no adherence, so there's no fastening of those letters to applying those letters to the medium. The screen, the letters are not embedded into the surface of the screen. And the best example for this is like when you have a shadow or a mirror reflecting whatever is opposite the mirror, no one's going to say that that's kosev, because the letters aren't attached to the screen. So maybe a screen would not be ksiva in that sense of the word. We have a different issue, and that is maybe you're being co-save the information onto the hard drive or the memory of the unit, of the phone or the screen, or not the screen, but of the phone or the brains of the computer. So here we have Yerushalmi that might come to shed light on this issue, and that is Yerushalmi speaks of a person who writes something with invisible ink, and then the recipient pours something on top of it to make the letters appear. In other words, the first person just puts the potential there, and the other person does a maisa to make that which was injected to be accessible. So the halacha is, the second guy is chayev, and the first guy is not chayev. So if that means, if we apply that logic here, so the one who injects the information into the brains of the computer might not be chayev, but the one who would retrieve it might decipher it, that might be a problem. So that would mean that putting it into writing in a way that requires a unique means to decipher that writing, the injecting, the putting the information there, putting the picture on the screen would not be considered kosev. So therefore, onto hard drives would also not be considered kosev. So we said that it's not kosev d'oraisa certainly on the screen, it's not kosev d'oraisa into the hard drive or the memory, but there could still be the different issue. That is the issue of boner or slash makah bepatish, meaning, until now, this CD or this hard drive was blank or was not significant, and by you putting this information into the hard drive or into the CD or wherever you're saving the information, that's giving it a meaningfulness, that's giving meaning and chashivas and worth to the item that you're injecting the information into. So maybe the saving, the act of saving that makes the permanent change, the permanent record, that might be considered maybe some sort of makah b'patish. That could be a certain issue to discuss. Now, when we talk about other kinds, that's as far as computer screens. Let's move on to another point, and that's as far as you go to a hotel, and they have automatic sinks, and automatic toilets, automatic doors to open hotels and hospitals. So here, the opening of a door or a flushing of a toilet or water in a sink is clearly not malacha in and of itself. There's only the question of electricity. And the question is, what is electricity? So again, we're going to have all the different shitas that we had in terms of the Chazanish, or of Asher Weiss, or Shlomo Zalman, or is it Molit, or Schechter's opinion. If we assume that the Issur is going to be like the Chazanish, that the use of electricity, the creating of the circuit, the harnessing of electricity itself is d'oraisa, so there's going to be very little room to maneuver. If, however, we assume like the others, who assume that it's, that's Chazanish and Rav Asher Weiss also, he's assuming that's Machem Patish, but if we assume like the others, and it's only going to be an Issur d'Rabbanon, there will be much more room to maneuver. Now, we could argue, perhaps, that if we assume that electricity is only drabanan, then what would happen in all the situations where it's a psik ratio? Meaning you're walking, and there's a light goes on. And you don't really care about the light, so it's a dar shena miskavin. You don't really, it's a psik ratio shalom nichole. So what happens if you put together the issue of psik ratio, which normally is also daraisa, and the fact that it's a lo nichale, and the fact that it's only nisa d'rabban to speak of, because let's say, again, we're talking about, let's assume that electricity is only d'rabban. So you have, what would be the halacha of a psik reisha d'lo nichale? Well, there's one opinion who says it's mutter, we're machmir. What about a psik reisha on a d'rabban? There is an opinion of the Chumash Hadash who says it's mutter, but again, we don't accept that either. So we don't accept that those who are makel, the Chumash Hadash, is makel by psik resha on the Rabbanon. We don't accept the Aruch who is makel by psik resha d'lo nichalei. But what happens if you have a psik resha d'lo nichalei on a Rabbanon? So here, there's a lamdus that says that maybe even if you're machmer on each one independently, when you have both together, there could be room to be makel. Why is that? Because there's a svara, that there's a lamdus that we have in psik resha, two different ways to look at psik resha, and if you have and a drabanan, dik a psik resha, maybe we could put these two together to make a mutter tie. What are the two svaras? Psik resha is normally asa daraisa, either because the fact that you know it will definitely happen means that you had malacha for the second malacha. Meaning, that you had kavana. If I know that if I do A, B will definitely happen, that means I am having kavana for B. That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is, since my maisa A causes B, it's as though B was my maisa. What's the nafkamina? The nafkamina is if it's a psik resha, the lo nichale. So since it's lo nichale, you don't have the kavana aspect. And if it's also drabanan, we don't consider it to be that it's a maisa, because it's only a drabanan. So it's not a maisa, it's not a real maisa. So therefore, if you have a psik resha, the lo nichale, on a drabanan, so it's neither a maisa nor is it kavana, and therefore neither of the svaras of psik resha should apply, and it should end up being mutter. That would be a good sad lahaka. There is a concern that when you walk into a building, or you flush a toilet, or you make the water go on by the automatic sink, that Rav Shlomo Zalman raises, and the clearest example would be when you open a fridge, we typically assume opening the fridge door and the light goes on, that's only a psik resha, right? That's what we assume. But Rav Shlomo Zalman suggests, no. If the way you turn the light on in the fridge is by opening the door, so you when you open the door, it's not that MMA something else happened, the light went on. That is how you turn on the light. And therefore, it might be even worse than a psik resha. It might be a malacha mamish. And therefore, according to this understanding of Rav Shlomo Zalman, when you walk into a building, or when you go to a toilet, the way you flush this toilet, the way you open these hotel doors or these lobby doors, is by walking through their motion zone. And therefore, maybe it won't be considered psik reishis. Actually, that's how you open it. But most poskim do not assume like that and do assume that it is only a psik reisha, which will have whatever clues will suggest. Now, let's talk. Finish off with the issue of walking with a light sensor. So, if I walk down the hall and there's a sensor that notices my movement and therefore turns on the light, so this could be likened on somewhat to a Rashba. The Rashba says the following, that let's say there's a deer caught in the room, so of course you're not allowed to catch a deer, you're not allowed to lock the door, but let's say you are mechavein, let's say you go into the room and you're not trying to trap the deer, but you walk into a room, and as you walk in the room, you want to close the door, and you, once you're doing it, you say, you know what, I have in mind to trap the deer. So the Rashi, believe it or not, actually says that's mutter. So some say that's only because of tzad, maybe tzad is different, but the Rashba is cited to say that maybe the svar here is because even though you did a maisa, but the psikresh, the result, is not near your action. You did an action here, and something else happened over there, the animal was nitzot over there in the other part of the room, that is not considered a psikresh that you're held accountable for. So too, you, again, even though we don't accept this rash, but that could be a tziruf when you're dealing with a drabbanon anyway, that if I do a maisa over here, and there's a psik resha, and something happens over there, that's not, that could be a tziruf lahakel in questions of is a psik resha mitztarev to me. I wish you all hatzlacha, and thank you for listening.